right. This feels really weird. I'm actually in the studio with producer Gabe watching me as we record this. I'm freaking out a little. I don't know why.
That's good.
He's a perfectly lovely individual. How are you doing, Eric?
I'm good. I did spend some of this week sick, which kind of sucked, but yeah. I'm back to 100% now. And honestly, very excited about everything that we have to talk about this week, just because like we spent so much time, especially like early Heroin episodes talking about this subject. And wow. Yeah.
Yeah. If you guys don't know, last week, the end of last week, after we had recorded our podcast,
naturally,
we found out that James Gunn has been rehired to direct Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. And of course, we're going to talk all about that during this episode.
Definitely.
We're also going to detail our picks for the team ups we really want to see in Avengers Endgame. But first, we have a bit of an update. Every now and then, it's good to have a refresh.
Yep.
And if you physically refresh your podcast feed and go to our Twitter profile, you will see that we now have a new logo. So no more flying blender.
Which had its charms.
Yeah. It's going to be an actual superhero.
Indeed.
Themed logo. More so themed logo.
Yeah.
And I like it. I think it's cool.
I'm a fan.
It's good to do something new every now and then. Do you like the logo?
I do. I do. Very much so. And if you like it too, or hell, if you hate it, maybe if you don't hate it, don't troll us on Twitter. But we'll hear your thoughts for sure.
Or if you have thoughts as to how it might improve.
There you go.
When we need another refresh.
Yes,
give us some ideas if you have those. That's
for sure.
That's a pleasant way to say it.
There you go. Exactly. If you want to submit fan art for your ideas, again, really not trying to invite trolling here because that is just insanely foolish. But positive vibes to everyone.
Yeah. And speaking of Twitter, Chris Hutton on Twitter, who's at Uncanny Comic, he seems to think that, or she, I guess Chris could be a she too, seems to think that we'll see Hawkeye watch his family fade away after the snap during Avengers Endgame.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, there's a moment in the trailer, in the most recently released trailer, where we see him. It looks like he's on his farm showing his oldest daughter how to use bow and arrow. And apparently, he's wearing his ankle monitor from being under house arrest. So Chris Hutton thinks that this is a flashback, and shortly after that time, we will be witness to Hawkeye watching his entire family disappear. Do you think that's a possibility?
I think it is incredibly. I basically think it's for certain at this point, if not just because, in that first trailer that we saw, we know that Hawkeye has gone down a darker path than
that's true.
When we last saw him, it's been rumors for a long time that darker path would be driven by the fact that he saw his entire family turn to dust. That tracks entirely logically. And also, I just don't necessarily think you could get away with just having Hawkeye appear and suddenly he's dark. Like, I think you actually need a flashback showing what happened to him.
So you do think we need to see him watch this event go down?
I mean, it's going to be sad. And, Jeremy Renner is an incredibly talented actor, so I imagine that he could provide a seriously powerful performance that's really going to wreck some fans in the same way that we were wrecked at the end of Avengers Infinity War. So, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of do want to see it, honestly, just as a film fan. Yeah, I kind of want to see that.
Oh, Eric. Okay. All right.
You don't?
So we'll see.
I mean, do you not?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm cool just realizing that they're all dead and that's why he's killing people with a katana or whatever now.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. I don't feel like I need to see it.
I don't know. I mean, that's pretty impressive empathy for a fictional character right there. I like that. he swung his way into your heart. I love it.
Yep. Okay. All right. Well, we'll find out in just a few weeks what happens.
Right.
But, you know, before we get into the meat and potatoes of our topic this week, we've got a lot of news to talk about like we usually do.
Indeed.
And let's start off with Captain Marvel. Box office, this movie is impressing people. We talked, I think, last week about the possibility of it making $1 billion. After last weekend, it has now made over $266 million domestically. And now, you know, like as of the middle of this week, it's expected to make over $800 million worldwide by the end of this week. Mm-hmm. So, Eric, what do you think?
I mean, last week I was a bit hesitant to say whether or not it was going to be a $1 billion film.
It's so much closer now.
There's no, in fact, I'd say that it's definitely going to be a $1 billion film at this point. Like, I mean, I think that there's a good chance it won't win the box office this weekend just because Jordan Peele's Us is coming out and that movie is going to be absolutely huge. But, you know, I mean, Captain Marvel's not going to slow down. It's going to hold on to a strong second place, I'm sure. And it's probably going to stay that way up until, again, the end of April, when we just get to see the arrival of the next big Marvel Studios film, which is why, yeah, this year is a little bit special. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a cool thing. We'll see what happens in in a couple weeks here. Of course, Shazam is coming out on April 5th.
Yeah, I guess
so
that's true.
Probably going to slow it down a bit. But that's still over a week away.
And I still think that Captain Marvel, like, even with Shazam in theaters, I mean, it provides such a different experience. I could see them both existing in the top five. Like, I could see us, Shazam and Captain Marvel, existing in the top five together for, like, a considerable amount of time.
Okay.
All things
more
considered.
Wait, what was that?
All things considered. I mean, a considerable amount of time, because Avengers Infinity War is, like, really not that far away. So
that is true.
Yeah.
That is true. All right, more Marvel news. This thing we've been talking about since November of 2017 is finally official. Yeah. Disney and Fox are finally merged. Disney now has access to Fantastic Four, Deadpool, the Super Scroll, and just tons of other Marvel and other non-Marvel characters and stories that it didn't before. Now, I mean, you know, it's a done deal, and even if it weren't a done deal, there's nothing I can do about it either way. I tend to think that we're one step closer to every futuristic movie or TV show where there's like five big companies who own the governments and the police forces and the planets and sectors of the galaxy and all that kind of stuff.
Planet
what
Google.
What do you think, Eric?
I mean, it is kind of scary on a certain level. I mean, you are in just like, and like within the span of just a few months, essentially, you're seeing the big six studios be reduced to the big five studios. I mean, Fox has been a major force in Hollywood for decades, and the film industry wouldn't be the same without them. And it's going to be interesting to see how that creatively plays just with the variety of releases that come out over the course of a given year. Of course, it has to be mentioned that an estimated 4,000 people are going to be losing their jobs. And that, of course, is that's hard. I mean, that's rough. That's a really
and
like,
that's something
it's a big
that
blow.
Happens anytime even smaller, much smaller companies merge.
Exactly.
You know, there's always people who basically have the same function and they let go. And one of them, you know, has to be let go of.
Yeah, and then I living in Los Angeles, I mean, there I know a lot of Fox employees, and like I know a lot of people for the past, like, again, past like year, who have been really just uncertain about what their future at the studio is. So like my honest feelings go out to everyone, and like I hope that the kind of I hope they all find positions, because like for the like because yeah, this industry needs them. I mean, that's interesting work that they do, and they all bring it to an interesting place. That being said, if we're just kind of taking it back to the kind of Marvel discussion, because this is Hero Blend, it's obviously incredible from a creative perspective, just because like it's like getting a limb replaced, essentially. It's you open up such incredible new opportunities. Like, there are so many incredible characters over the years where like Marvel fans have like, oh man, I can't wait until that so-and-so character gets introduced in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And like a lot of them are villains too. Like, I mean, I'm thinking about like Doctor Doom and Galactus and Annihilus and all these characters. But they didn't have access to them because of rights issues that were made, rights deals that were made back in the 1990s when Marvel was a bankrupt company, literally. So from a creative perspective, and you mentioned the Super Scroll, that's another, I mean, the Fantastic Four, like, it's, they're, like, the future, it's really tremendously exciting. there was never going to be a shortage of characters that Marvel could explore. And frankly, that
right.
shines through in the fact that we're getting like an Eternals movie and a Shang-Chi movie. But obviously, this is a brand new ball game for the MCU, and the mm-hmm. potential is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I think we've talked before about, you know, the slowness they will have to proceed with to start bringing some of those other characters who we've already seen on the big screen into the official MCU and what that process is going to be like. And yeah, it's going to be a relatively slow process. We're not going to see any of that stuff happen for at least a couple of years.
It's going to be a minute. Though, like, honestly, what is cool on a certain level is, like, Deadpool is far and away the most flexible character in that respect, just because yeah. of his fourth wall breaking. The guy could yep. just, like, saunter in and just say, like, hey, guys, what did I miss? And you probably wouldn't skip a beat. And, I mean, there's a lot of hurdles, and we don't have time to get into this because there's a lot of stuff that we need to cover. But, yep. like, you can't, for example, just like you can't have mutants just say like, oh no, by the way, there are people with superpowers all over the place in the world, and like there are mutants and they're real and like they exist all over the MCU. That's gonna be delicate work. But you know, I feel like Deadpool being a mutate as opposed to a mutant, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm excited though.
Speaking of Marvel, again,
yeah.
The end of Phase 3 comes with the release of Avengers Endgame, and Kevin Feige has now spoken out and revealed that all those 21 movies that have been, that we've been seeing for the past, you know, almost 11 years now, since 2008, from Iron Man through Endgame, have that you know, Phase 1, 2, and 3 has its own name, and it is the Infinity Saga.
Mm-hmm. I dig
which
it.
Is perfect.
Yeah.
And, you know, appropriately epic. But the question now is, what could be next? And Eric, do you think they already know?
Well,
they seem to be very good at planning things out. They haven't told us specifically what's coming. But do you think they already know if there's going to be a big, long-ranging saga, like the Infinity Saga?
My every single ounce of my fan heart says like, oh, please God, yes, because I want them to know everything. Like, I want them to be planning until like 2050. And in fact, like, I think even Kevin Feige said like probably like 3 or 4 years ago that they were planning up. They had a plan up until 2024. And again, that was 3 or 4 years ago. So who God knows where they are at this point.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to believe that they knew that the first three phases of this franchise were always going to be building up to Thanos collecting the Infinity Gauntlet. I hope they know exactly, like, that's long-term planning. Again, that's like, it's 20 yeah. plus movies that you're working yeah. with, and you have to like, and obviously not every movie is going to contribute in a certain way, but at the same time, like, it is kind of going to create an interesting direction. And I have to imagine that as soon as we start Phase 4, the idea, there is going to be a tiny little idea that is going to kind of blossom into something a lot bigger over the yeah. many course of years. And frankly, it's also worth noting, like, they have so much more confidence now. Like, obviously you couldn't introduce Thanos and the Infinity Stones and all that in the first Iron Man, but
right.
I mean, if you wanted to drop your first tiny little hint in Spider-Man Far From Home, and then every single little project that comes after it has their own just little mini piece, just because, like, you can, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm for it.
Yeah, they've got the confidence now where they know these movies are going to be going for years and years and years. So they, like you said, they can start dropping tiny little hints, which might not look like anything
exactly
until we go back a few years and start adding things up.
Mm-hmm. And that's joy. That's joy for
yeah. And Eric, I know you'll be doing that, so I can count on you for that.
Oh, for sure.
Speaking of Avengers Endgame. Now, Eric, you had alluded to this being your belief quite a few episodes ago, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But the Russo brothers have now admitted that they put scenes in the trailers that will not be in the final movie to, quote, preserve the surprise of the narrative. Are you okay with this?
That is
especially as someone who tends to watch the trailer over and over and over and over and over and over again. Have you sometimes gotten attached to scenes in those trailers hoping they'll be in the movie, and then you get to the movie and you're like, what the hell?
Honestly, It's usually not so much with like specific scenes, but actually with music. Like if you use a song in a trailer that I listen to thousands of times, and then you don't use it in the movie, I'm totally bummed. And actually, like Captain Marvel, like the use of Connection by Elastica, like I was so amped for the use of that song in the actual film, and then the fact that it was actually included, I was like, hey, that's really, really good, because otherwise I would have been upset. I'd actually go as far as to say that the opposite is true. I am 100%, I am 10,000% totally okay with fake footage and trailers and then like little stuff being edited out. Like, honestly, my favorite trailers are the ones that are just comprised of like original footage that don't actually feature anything from the movie but give you a kind of taste of what to expect.
Okay.
Like, because it's like, again, because I watch these trailers. Like, if the footage is out there, I have no impulse control. I'm going to watch it many, many times. And, like, and
it's good that we know this about you, though. Eric has no impulse control.
I do myself a disservice. It's bad. And, but so if they are actually taking extra steps to protect people like me, I'm not going to say no. I'm going to say thank you, Joe and Anthony Russo. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I can't think of any specific instances, but there have been times where I've watched a trailer and kind of been looking forward to a scene or an interaction or something and then not gotten it and gone, man, come on. I was kind of looking forward to that.
There is kind of a weird thing where it's like there are certain, like, you expect certain things to happen or, like, a line is read in a different way and then you're just like, oh, that was...
They just use a different take in the trailer than they end up using in the final movie. Yeah.
Yeah, so...
All right. Well, we know Captain Marvel is tearing up theaters right now, and she'll be in Avengers Endgame. But Kevin Feige, who likes to talk that Kevin Feige.
He does.
He has said that, here's his direct quote, Captain Marvel is about to take the lead and be at the forefront of the entire cinematic universe. What do you think this could mean for the MCU as a whole and where it's going?
Well, I mean, I think part of what it is the fact that Captain Marvel, unlike almost any character, is both Earth and cosmic-based. Like, the fact that you can engage that character with stories on either terrain and you get something interesting from it. Mm-hmm. And, like, now that we are living in a world where, Thanos has done what he did, like the world, obviously we know back in Avengers that like there was all these alien invasion stuff, but like the world has advanced to a certain point where like cosmic and Earth-based stories are going to be eventually an equal balance. I mean, James Gunn even talked about, I mean, this was back when he first announced that he was going to be involved with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, but he even talked about like there's going to be a kind of expansion of what cosmic stories are in the MCU going forward. And like, I love the idea of Captain Marvel being the individual. And by the way, as has been emphasized many, many times, one of the most powerful, in fact, the most powerful character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it makes sense that she would kind of be the figure that could, like, tie both those worlds together.
And also, in the comics, wasn't she at one point an Avenger, and at another point, wasn't she a Guardian of the Galaxy?
100%. That's 100% true. And I could see her playing both roles. And in fact, like, how great would it be if she's in Guardians of the Galaxy 3? Like, I'd be so thrilled. Like, that would be super, super cool. But, I mean, we'll see if that actually happens. And, like, it may be that James Gunn is, like, wants to finish off his story with these, like, specific characters before that
There's happens. Always room but... for an end credit scene with her.
Exactly. There you go.
Yeah. All right. Now, one movie that we've been, you know, hearing rumors about, but very little has been confirmed, is Black Widow. Mm-hmm. She's finally getting her solo movie. And now there's a Fighting With My Family star, Florence Pugh, who I think played the lead role in that movie, played Paige. She's rumored to be eyeing a role in the movie, in the Black Widow movie. And this is the first, like, additional casting information I believe we've gotten on this movie, aside from the fact that obviously Scarlett Johansson is going to be playing Black Widow again. Mm-hmm. Now, we have no idea, what this movie is actually going to be about. There have been rumors about it, you know, going back in time and being, you know, and talking about how she originally got her training and all that kind of stuff. And we also don't know who Florence Pugh might be playing, but there's a rumor that Saoirse Ronan was up for the same part that Florence Pugh is now mulling over, So it seems like she won out against some major talent, and this is a pretty, whatever the role is, it's pretty important.
I have to imagine. And like, I didn't see Fighting With My Family, but like, I know a few people who have, and they all really, really enjoyed it. Obviously, it got really great reviews. It didn't do exactly spectacularly at the box office.
Yeah.
But I can't say I'm overly familiar with Florence Pugh's work in general, but I mean, her name certainly seems to have some heat behind it, and Marvel Studios has a very strong track history of kind of going with its gut when it comes to young and not necessarily like proven talent, and just kind of giving them a lot of responsibility, and just obviously it's worked out many, many times in the past, and I can't even speculate what kind of role this would be without, because again, who knows what this movie is about in any single capacity. Yeah. Good. I'm excited to see whatever it winds up being. And
for all we know,
She's
playing a young version of Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
Who then gets facial reconstruction to look like the Scarlett Johansson we know today.
Honestly, I was like, there was, because I actually wrote up the news story when that news broke, and I was thinking to myself, like, you know, would they do that, or would just like after what we saw in Captain Marvel, what they did with Samuel Jackson,
would they just de-age her a bit? Yeah,
exactly. I don't think you would. Or, I mean, I wouldn't even think that you would need de-aging technology. Like, you could probably, like, Scarlett Johansson with a good amount of makeup, you could probably make her look quite a bit young. So I mean, who knows what the direction they'll go with that? So yeah.
Okay. All right, guys, DC is going through changes. We've known this for a while now. But one thing that has come up is that Suicide Squad, what we've been calling Suicide Squad 2, should not be called Suicide Squad 2 ever again in the history of the universe, because this James Gunn movie is a total reboot. All right, now we had talked before because they had been saying that it was going to be a soft reboot, which sounds a lot gentler and a lot more understandable, actually, since they're planning to have at least one character return who's played by the same actor who played that character in the first movie. But now it's being called a total reboot. Can you really do that? Can you really call it a total reboot if you have an actor come back and play the same role? Are they just being stupid because they don't want us to connect this movie to the first one?
I mean, I think it's just what it is like the DC continuity isn't really sure what it is right now. So if this is like a new continuity, it's like it's like layers of the multiverse. So like, there are an infinite number of realities, and that includes like an infinite number of those that almost look identical to our own reality, except have like the most minuscule of differences that make it a little bit different. So it's possible that like the DC extended universe as we knew it, which included the David Ayer Suicide Squad film, existed in a different layer, but a very like very close, but very like parallel reality where Harley Quinn also happens to look a lot like Margot Robbie and maybe has experienced some similar stuff in the past. However, is a also different version of her.
As you're saying this, you can feel the stretch. I know you can.
This is me entirely just like trying to come up with some explanation for like what the DC continuity is right now, because like we're going to be continuing this conversation in what is our next headline, because it's just they said after Aquaman and as we obviously have Shazam coming up very, very soon, that like the DC extended universe as we saw it in Justice League isn't quite exactly what it was being built up to be. Right now it is turning to something simpler. So yeah, it's
weird. Speaking of the next headline, there's another DC movie coming out that's not a sequel, but it is a sequel. Wonder Woman 1984 is the producer, Charles Roven, is saying that it's not a sequel. Here's what he said. Patty Jenkins was determined that this movie should be the next iteration of Wonder Woman, but not a sequel, whatever that means. Yeah. And she's definitely delivering on that. It's a completely different time frame, and you'll get a sense of what Diana/Wonder Woman has been doing in the intervening years. But it's a completely different story that we're telling, even though it'll have a lot of the same emotional things, a lot of humor, a lot of brave action, tugs at the heartstrings as well. That sounds like a sequel, Eric.
Yeah, I'm really, like, the fact that he uses the phrase and intervening also, years means
and
that...
And also, here's the thing. I understand why they don't want us to think about the first Suicide Squad, because critically, it didn't do that well.
Mm-hmm.
But pretty much everybody loved Wonder Woman. Why try to distance Wonder Woman 1984 from that movie by saying it's not a sequel, and you have the same people playing the same characters... Chris Pine is going to be back.
He's there.
So,
yeah.
Like, what?
I don't get it. I like this quote very much mystifies me. I don't know what Charles Roven's definition of a sequel is, but for me, it's a continuation, a story that is a continuation of a previous story.
And since we're going to be seeing what she was up to for part of the time between World War One and what happened in Batman v Superman, then that is a sequel.
Right. The fact that he uses intervening years as a phrase, like what she's been doing in the intervening years, like that's an implication of continuity, which means sequel. So again, like I'm not quite sure. But ultimately, again, like I'll take this back to what Peter Safran said about the Suicide Squad being a total reboot. I think what it is just like they're trying to be a little bit softer. They're trying to play it like a little bit cooler when it comes to the like hashtag it's all connected, borrowing from Jeff Loeb over at Marvel. They're saying like maybe the DC Extended Universe doesn't exist as we thought it did. Maybe these are just stories featuring these characters, and like you shouldn't expect like Wonder Woman 1984 to feature hints that lead to the arrival of Darkseid or the coming of Darkseid or whatever the hell it was going to be in Justice League.
Yeah, well, nobody was expecting that anyway.
Nobody was. It's absolutely 100% true, Adrian. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, this is some kind of big news.
Yes.
The Flash movie has been just a mess and in the doldrums for years now. But Ezra Miller, who, of course, has played the Flash and, as far as we know, is still going to be the Flash for a while, has taken the initiative to work on the script with Grant Morrison, who is a big deal comic book writer. Now, the current directors were hoping to go more lighthearted with the story, but Ezra Miller would like the movie to be darker. And so he's decided to work on the script. But this sounds like kind of a gamble for him if he wants to keep playing The Flash. His contract apparently expires this May. And if Warner Brothers and or the directors don't like his script, we could be looking at another long delay while they find a new Flash.
Yep.
Okay. Two things, Eric. First of all, what... in the holy universe, is this mess? Why has this been so difficult? And tell us a bit about Grant Morrison if people don't know.
Sure. Address the first half.
Okay.
Yeah, this does sound complicated behind the scenes. That conflict doesn't sound awesome. He's working on the script. It sounds like he's working on a script that essentially like might have a competing vision with the one that John Francis Daley and Jonathan Goldstein are currently working on, as you kind of said. That's a weird place for this project to currently be. I don't know if Ezra Miller has any writing experience. So that alone by itself is interesting. It's cool that I guess they took the initiative to actually like say, no, like I have a vision of what this character should be.
And that he's this dedicated to the movie.
Absolutely.
After all the stops and starts that it's been through.
And Lord knows there are tons of actors out there who turned out to be fantastic filmmakers. So, I mean, I'm not going to discount him on any level there. As for Grant Morrison, Grant Morrison is awesome. Grant Morrison is actually one of my favorite comic book writers. He's worked with DC a lot over the years. One of his most famous stories, and actually one of my favorite DC, like, it's not a full series, but it's kind of a story. It's called Arkham Asylum, which is just kind of this really dark and totally screwed up investigation of Batman going into Arkham Asylum, and it's absolutely brilliant. He wrote on Batman for quite a long time. He also did some runs of other characters like Animal Man. But you know, he is just he's known for not only very dark but also incredibly complex storylines. He's not a guy who, like, if you're just a beginner comic book reader that you just kind of dive into. He really puts a lot of thought into. It's known for a lot of his cerebral work. And in fact, he also worked with Marvel for quite a long time as well. And in fact, actually did a run called the new X-Men, which is actually one of my favorite runs on that book. So if you are a big comic book fan and you don't know about Grant Morrison, check him out. The fact that he's now working in this capacity on Flash, I think, is interesting. Whether or not we'll actually ever see what this movie winds up being, because, again, Warner Brothers might end up deciding to go with the Goldstein and Daly version instead.
Yeah.
But, you know, if that does happen, boy, do I wish that script would leak, because I'd be fascinated to read it.
Okay.
For sure.
All right. Another movie.
Yeah.
From DC. It's had some ups and downs, especially lately.
In the reboot realm, sure.
Yeah, yeah. And also rebooting itself. Director Matt Reeves has now said on Twitter that it looks like the Batman will start filming near the end of the year. And that gives the movie plenty of time to hit what is now its June 25th, 2021 release date. Could Eric, could they possibly be that close to finding their Batman?
I mean,
because whoever this is, unless he's already kind of beefy, is going to have to like bulk up a little bit and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I mean, they have been, they've certainly, like, they must have known for a while that Ben Affleck was not going to return for this project. They certainly had to keep any kind of search quiet. I think we've been hearing in recent weeks about actors like Armie Hammer saying just like, no, I haven't been approached yet for the role, but I'd be interested. I think Oscar Isaac said something very similar this week. And by the way, either one of them, totally okay with it. If either one of those guys, they wanted to reach out and play Batman,
At this point, considering that they want somebody younger, I think Oscar Isaac would be too old. He's 40.
I guess that's true.
Yeah, that's bordering on, you know, Ben Affleck's 47, I think it is.
Yeah.
And I think they wanted to do like late 20s, early 30s.
But he's so talented.
Yes, that's true.
I don't know. I love Oscar Isaac. That guy's great. But anyway, if they, like you said, though, I mean, if they are going to be starting to film at the end of this year, then yeah, they must be very, very close. And honestly, like, this is the exact kind of thing that you want to announce at San Diego Comic-Con. You want to, like, be able to go out on that stage,
bring that actor out,
and say, like, this is your new Batman, bam. I don't think ever in history it's ever actually gotten that far. It's more like when that happens, it's like, oh, this is a confirmation of a leaked report that we saw 3 months ago.
Right. It would be fascinating, though, if they can completely keep their choice under wraps somehow until Comic-Con.
I mean, because that's the thing. I am in such a conflict with this industry because I love being surprised so, so much. But at the same time, it is almost partially my job to not surprise anybody. So, it's a weird, weird balance. But at the same time, and I will just say this, never, ever, ever trying to ruin any kind of experience for absolutely anybody. So, thumbs up there.
All right. All right. Shazam is coming out on April 5th. I actually have an early ticket. I'm going to see it this weekend.
Right.
But David F. Sandberg has already said that he would love to come back and do the sequel if Shazam gets one. Now, we've talked a bit about the fact that superhero movies and franchises in general tend to have many different directors. Do you think there's like a reason for that beyond like the directors saying, I've already done that, I want to move on?
It's interesting because, I mean, it is noteworthy that most superhero trilogies do not get completed by the people who start them. Like, for example, James Gunn, now that he's back with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, he's actually going to be the first filmmaker to complete a full trilogy himself within the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, if you take that into consideration for, like, all the franchises, like, Peyton Reed may be the second one to do it if he's doing Ant-Man and the Wasp 3.
Yeah.
You have Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, you have Christopher Nolan's Batman, but, like, beyond that, like, you don't see a lot of it. And part of it is just because, like, as a movie is successful, the studio wants to get more and more involved. They have more and more of their thoughts. They obviously, like, there's a whole merchandise angle on it before. They want to make sure the movie sells to certain demographics that they maybe didn't hit before. And that kind of, like, that creative like struggle can really choke a filmmaker. That can really suck. And so like a lot of filmmakers get to a point where they're just like, you know what? I don't need to deal with this. I can go just do something else.
Right.
And I don't have to deal with this stress. And that happens a lot. I mean, in fact, like I think Joss Whedon with the Avengers is a very good example of that. Like if you just follow the commentary.
I think he did actually say that he was like burnt out. Like,
yeah, like after
Age of Ultron just kind of ruined him.
Very much so. Like, and so, yeah, I don't think any, like, and it's because, I mean, Avengers was a ridiculously huge hit, and the world had never seen anything like it, and so, like, behind the scenes, he had to make a few compromises that he didn't necessarily want to make, and that hurt his overall filmmaking experience. However, then you also, like, have, like, the development of these comic book movies, and, like, as you get, like, more confidence in their creation, I think there is more of a license for the studios to say, like, well, you know what? You did do well on this one, and it is a crazy amount of money that we're giving you, but maybe we will try to relax. Again, pipe dream. Like, this never happens, ever. But, but like, apparently David F. Sandberg, though, had a big enough, was a fan of working on Shazam and within this system. It's clearly worked out for him, and so, and obviously, and like, and I'll just say, having seen the movie, Shazam is an incredibly well-directed film. David F. Sandberg is an incredibly talented dude. So, if he wants to return for Shazam 2, I'm all about it.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned...
Yes.
...the fact that James Gunn will now be the first director within the MCU to complete a trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
We now have to get into, like, 20 minutes
20 minutes under the gun. I love it. This is great.
As I said at the top of this podcast, he's been rehired.
Yep.
He is now officially returning to direct Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Obviously, we've spent a lot of time talking about this and what a mess it was for a while. Last summer, he got fired because some old tweets of his got dredged up, which were offensive.
Yeah, I don't think we have ever defended the jokes themselves, which, yeah, they're really undefensible. Like, and James Gunn doesn't even defend them. He clearly said, no, these were stupid jokes and I regret them. Yeah. So anyway.
So Disney fired him and said publicly that he was not going to get rehired, but apparently they changed their minds.
Yep.
And the big secret in all of this is that, okay, according to Deadline, Gunn, well, I think this is just a fact that we did kind of know, that Gunn had met with Disney president Alan Horn several times, and Horn was persuaded by Gunn's public apology and handling of the situation. And this is the according to Deadline part. He decided to rehire him, but made that decision months ago. So before the end of 2018, the decision had been made to rehire James Gunn. But the question is, like, how did they keep it that massive of a secret? Why did they do it? Were they just waiting for the controversy to die down? And how long has it been since James Gunn and the cast found out that he was officially rehired?
All very, very fair questions, and all, like, being things that, like, it's weird because, like, it's one of those things that, like, it's like old, like, it's like this version of Rogue One before the reshoots were done. Like, we're never going to see what that was. Like, that's never going to be made, like, ultimately public. We're only going to be able to hear about it from, like, stories from insiders. And so, like, I don't know if we're ever going to get the full details on how this all went down. My bet is the reason you do that is just because you don't, like, there is a certain amount of controversy in bringing James Gunn back, and that there are some people out there who were so offended by these jokes that they feel that he should have lost his job, which, again, like, obviously you and I are not part of that grouping. And so, like, you just wanted to kind of just avoid all of the noise from them. And frankly, there hasn't been that much. I don't like it. There has been overwhelming support for James Gunn in this situation.
And also sorry to cut you off.
Yeah,
making this decision months ago and not letting anybody in on it. All we did was keep talking about it and how much a mess Guardians 3 was, and that we didn't know when it was going to come out, if it was ever going to get made. So all it did was kind of, we kept talking about it.
It's
true. You know, it was still continuing to fuel, like, itself.
Yeah, no, and through all of that, it just kind of continued to make Disney look bad. It's like they kind of just misjudged it on that angle. It's just like the longer they waited to rehire James Gunn, the kind of worse they looked. And it was partially also for one reason, because like obviously no other controversy came out about James Gunn. Like there was no other like shoe to drop. There was no like other thing that James Gunn did that was so offensive that like people were saying like, oh, I guess Disney did make the right call there. That never happened. And B, like there was also the fact that, oh, what did James Gunn do just within weeks of like losing his job at Disney and getting his contract canceled? He went to the competitor and got a job at the other studio. Like, so, I mean, and like, and people viewed it that way. It's just like, oh, so like Warner Brothers, he's good enough to work for Warner Brothers, but he's not good enough to work for Disney. Like this is stupid. And like that's how it came down. I mean, like, and so, you know, I like it is weird that it took apparently months for them to reveal this. I will say, just on a personal note also, like I want to give a round of applause to Mr. Kevin Feige, because if he knew about this, when I sat down to talk with him for Captain Marvel.
Well, as we know, he talks a lot.
He talks a lot. But I sat down with him to talk to Captain Marvel, and I brought up James Gunn. Like, I mentioned, like, I asked about the influence that he was apparently going to have, like, that before his firing he was supposedly going to have, and Kevin Feige told me, like, with a straight face and frankly a bit of awkwardness, that like that like the situation like that had been a bit overblown, that James Gunn's influence over the future of the cosmic movies. And so, and like I walked away from that conversation saying like, well, I guess James Gunn's never coming back to the MCU. And so, like, when this news broke last Friday, it was my day off. Like, I didn't have any work to do, and I was, like, on Twitter and suddenly saw this deadline report, and it blew me away. I truly did not see this coming at all. That
none of us
said,
did.
If my enthusiasm isn't clear, it is through the roof.
How do you think they kept this a secret? Do you think just like five people knew and that's it?
I mean, it must be that situation, just because you also, like, there have been quotes from Sean Gunn in recent weeks where...
And Chris Pratt, where it made it sound like they were just so sure it was going to happen. It wasn't going to be a problem at all.
Yeah.
Which is why I think maybe the cast at least knew at least a couple weeks ago.
Which, I mean, and it does make a bit of sense, because it's just like, especially because like Dave Bautista, like, who is being so incredibly, not only vocal about it, but also very anti-Disney in his like vocality. you kind of just want Disney to say like that, say like, oh no, we're bringing it back, just to like say like, no, please stop talking. But I mean, so you have that whole situation. So yeah, like I wouldn't be surprised if the cast knew, and like they were probably kept like a talking point of like, well, I have a feeling that things will kind of work out. And they did, to their credit, and it didn't break. The news didn't break out before it was supposed to. James Gunn has issued a statement, in support of all the people who like had his back over the past couple of months. And so, like, it is weird to like even just look back on it, but you know, it's ultimately just a great thing for everything.
Yeah. Now, of course, DC fans, you're probably wondering, what about the total reboot that will be known as the Suicide Squad? What's happening with that? And he's still on board to write and direct that movie. That's still going forward. And the release date is set for August 6, 2021. That is still the release date as far as we know. And he's still working on it. So that isn't going to change, which is also fabulous and just kind of odd in its own way.
It's amazing. Like, it's weird that, like, for all the, like, insane stress and, like, drama and all, like, and honestly, like, this, like, when this news came out during San Diego Comic-Con last year, like, and I was working the event, which is in itself a very stressful event, and I heard this news, like, it stressed me out. Like, it legitimately put a damper on, like, the entire, there were a lot of bad things that went down at San Diego Comic-Con last year, but without getting into all of that, but, like, so, like, when you ultimately look at how everything turned out, it's kind of amazing just how positive things are, and the Suicide Squad is definitely an amazing example of that, because if you just go back a couple of years, James Gunn like actually like said how much he wanted to make it was technically in the realm, he was talking about a Thunderbolts movie, but like he was saying that he had this like goal to make this movie about a team of supervillains, like, doing essentially black ops work, and even mention, like, well, I guess I'll probably never get the chance to do anything like that because Suicide Squad exists or is, like, going to be made. And then mm-hmm. he gets to actually make a Suicide Squad movie despite the fact, like, it required him getting fired from Disney, not making yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy 3 for a minute so he could work on this project. And then at the end of the day, he gets to come back to Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 anyway. I mean, who designed this? This is amazing. Yeah.
How does this happen?
It's really, like, not an outcome that I ever saw coming. And it's awesome. Like, and this, as someone who is a big fan of James Gunn. And by the way, I mentioned that, like, I had a sick day earlier this week. I actually used it to, like, I spent part of it watching both Slither and Super just because, like, yeah, I am a really big James Gunn fan. Also, by the way, do not watch Slither when you're sick. It's a bad choice. Yeah. I'm just going to put that out there. Just don't do it.
You learned the hard way.
I learned the hard way. I did really enjoy the movie because it's a great movie, but not a movie to watch when you're sick. Like, mm-hmm. I should have, like, Princess Bride or just literally anything else. Like, just a better, I could have chosen better. But anyway, the fact that, I get to see a Suicide Squad movie directed by James Gunn, and I also get to see a Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 is awesome. And also just, like, I just love the fact that it's almost kind of an example of detente between Marvel and DC. It feels like a chance for harmony, which by itself is just nuts. The whole situation blows my mind.
Oh, okay. So Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, it was supposed to start filming, like, it was supposed to be filming, like, right now, basically.
Yeah, no, it was supposed to start filming in January. So it would be, near rapid production right now, yeah.
He got fired, and it was supposed to come out next year, correct?
Correct. It never got further than 2020, which James Gunn, like, said it was going to be coming out. And people, like, rightly assumed, given that it was the targeted production, that it was going to be the May 2020 slot. But yeah, that's not happening.
Okay, so now the question is, when are we going to see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3? Mm-hmm. Especially since he's doing the Suicide Squad first.
Yes. Yeah, a fair question. It certainly doesn't sound like, if the Suicide Squad is coming out in 2021, I can't imagine that, like, it's not going to, like, double feed. He's not going to make them at the same time. It's not like Suicide Squad is going to come out in 2021.
Yeah, that can't happen.
And it's 2022 at the earliest that he actually gets to release this movie, which, by the way, is kind of fascinating in its own right, just because, like, If you think about it, like, he wrote the script for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 with the idea that it was going to be the second movie that comes out in the MCU after Avengers Endgame. So, like, mm-hmm. it's going to be the fallout for these characters after their whole dealing with Thanos. And instead of doing that literally just one full year after that whole battle goes down, he's instead going to be doing it, like, 3 years after. So it almost becomes, like, a period piece because, like, which is not even that new for Guardians of the Galaxy, because they also, like, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 was set just a couple months after Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1, despite coming out 3 years later. But that by itself is an interesting thing because, like, our mindset of what the MCU is going to be completely different in 2022. Like, there are going to be at least five movies that are going to be, five MCU movies that are, assuming that they don't release a movie in May 2020, which just doesn't seem possible at this point. But there are going to be, like, at least five other MCU titles that are released between Spider-Man Far From Home and whenever Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 comes out. Like, how that might influence whatever goes down is interesting. Hell, I mean, it's interesting by itself just to think, like, the fact that James Gunn now has an additional, 2 years or 1 to 2 years to actually work on the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 script that he would not have had if he was, like, still just, I'm just gonna say it, under the gun to get, like, in the wake, get it done in the wake of Avengers Endgame. So this is, like, it puts the project in a really interesting place, and a potentially even more interesting place than it would have been otherwise.
Yeah, and they had he had already completed a script that Dave Bautista especially had made many calls for them to use, or he was going to be out of there.
Exactly.
Do you think that he'll, like, do a big retooling of the script to reflect when this will come out now? or just stick with kind of a period piece?
I think that is going to be a huge question that, like, because, like, what's really interesting is the release of Brightburn is coming out, I believe, towards the end of May. And while James Gunn didn't direct it, he didn't write it. I think it's based on a script that was written by his brother and his cousin. He is a producer on it. His name is being used to support it. And in fact, actually, at San Diego Comic-Con, like, literally a panel for Brightburn was scheduled just hours after the whole, like, James Gunn
all the news
being fired.
Came out.
That, and that panel wound up being canceled and the project wound up being pushed back. But Brightburn, like, James Gunn is kind of a driving force behind the creation of Brightburn. I would be incredibly shocked if he didn't participate in the press day for that. So, like, that's when we are going to probably start hearing a lot more from James Gunn, and he's going to start doing interviews. And I'm keeping my fingers very, very tightly crossed that I'm personally going to be able to talk to him, because, like, yeah, I have questions.
When and, did you know that you were rehired, James Gunn?
Yeah, seriously.
How long have you known?
So I think that obviously we'll be getting a few more details about that at that point. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I think he should do a rewrite, just because, like, contexts of everything have changed since he last did any kind of official work on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to see kind of how that wound up influencing his take.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't know if we'll care that much about the direct fallout of the decimation at that point. And, you know, bringing everybody back.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it may just have a completely different context. And, like, and honestly, and who knows, if, like, I mean, we know so little about Avengers Endgame. Like, it could be possible that, like, there is a time travel plot that unwinds within the first 20 minutes of the movie that suddenly, like, finds every single member of the Guardians of the Galaxy undead and back undusted. And, like, they, like, there's another step forward from there. So, like, yeah, like, the fact that I think we'll have a much better, like, clearer picture of what Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 is, basically, after we understand what Endgame is, which, yeah,
it just occurred to me while you were saying that, that it's possible that in Endgame, everybody doesn't come back at once. It might be gradual. They might have to do separate things to get separate groups of people back.
Oh, yeah.
No, I hadn't thought about that before.
I mean, yeah, no, like, I mean, because you could just, like, if you are doing a time travel plot, you essentially, like, you can go back in time and get, like, the prime version of this character and bring them back specifically to fight for your cause. So, yeah. I'd love that. That's a great idea.
Okay, so many things. So many things. Now, speaking of Avengers Endgame, obviously there's going to be a lot of characters who are going to be together who haven't been together before. And they're obviously under, like, a really, it's a really going to be an intense situation trying to figure out how to undo this. So we have come up with some ideas for team-ups we want to see in Endgame. Different characters, different perspectives, some aliens, some not aliens.
Yeah, right.
Superpowered people who just use tech to get their powers. Eric, what's your first team-up?
I am going to start with just the most basic one, and it's just because, like, it's one that this movie has to deal with, and in fact, we now know, kind of based on the last trailer, that it must, but Captain America and Iron Man, because, like, these characters have been in crazy conflict since the end of Captain America Civil War. They didn't get to actually patch up anything in Avengers Infinity War, just because as he was about to call. Yeah, exactly. They just wound up literally on completely different sides of the universe. So, they haven't been able to hash things out, despite the fact that, like, it does kind of seem like Tony has kind of eased up a little bit. To kind of get back to what I was alluding to, there is that shot in the most recent Avengers Endgame trailer where you actually see Captain America and Tony Stark in those, like, white suits where, like, so clear, like, I can't imagine that before that they didn't have a conversation. So, but so not only do I want to see, like, that relationship kind of be some kind
healed.
Of repaired. But I want to see them fight together as well. Like, that's, I'm excited.
Yeah.
How about
All
you?
Right.
Give me your first.
My first one, Tony and Nebula. We thought for a long time that she just abandons him. So I want to know how this all goes down. How helpful is she? Does she abandon him and come back? Does she need a lot of convincing to stay or to come back at some point? How do they work together? when they're trying to get, you know, to Earth? How does it work? How does it all work out? I'm interested to see how all that's going to happen.
For sure. And I mean, and also, like, Nebula is just not a character with a real big sense of humor. And Tony Stark is obviously, like, Quipmaster 3000. So, yeah. Like, I am curious if she has just absolutely zero patience for any of his crap.
Just which, no tolerance at all. Exactly. I can definitely see that. It's like, okay, let's work together and get this done. But otherwise, don't talk to me.
Exactly.
What's your next one?
My next one, I kind of went the polar opposite of Cap and Iron Man, which is something that you like, a relationship you think about every single time you think about the MCU, or at least I do. But I went for Ant-Man and Rocket because for starters, like, they aren't two characters that you'd necessarily think like, oh yeah, those two should be in a room together. That makes every kind of sense. But like, I just also like, they have their own weird sense of humors that I think would play off each other well. But also, okay. Like, I am a bit fascinated by Rocket witnessing shrinking technology, just because I'm not sure exactly. Like, it could be something that he is immensely aware of because he's seen it happen like 18,000 different ways out in the cosmos. It could also right. be that this is the first
something
time
brand
that
new
he has ever seen it, and I'm curious to like see how. And like, also, there is a part of me, like, just especially based off the what we saw in Ant-Man and the Wasp, if, like, there was a scene where, like, where Scott Lang was the size of Rocket running around together for an adventure, tell me that wouldn't be adorable. Exactly. So, yes, that's the word. It's 100% the word, so.
Yeah.
Hit me with the second.
Okay. My second choice is the captains. Captain America, Captain Marvel.
Love it. Nice.
They both have that military background, which I think is going to, you know, breed some similarities, probably. So, you know, will it be just in thought, or will it also be in tactics and how they approach problems? And also, they're both kind of displaced in time. Obviously, there's a big difference between, you know, having like the 40s or whatever be, you know, your time period, and then waking up in the 2000s,
sure.
and, you know, floating around in the 1990s, and then coming back to Earth in the 2000s, and, you know, the 2010s or whatever. But we don't know how much time Captain Marvel has spent on Earth in those intervening years. You know, is she going to be freaked out that the internet is a great big deal?
Yeah, but it's gotten a lot faster than those dial-up days, for sure.
Yeah. So they're also, you know, so they're both kind of displaced from their natural time period. So I think the military thing and that thing will make their interaction kind of interesting.
I kind of want to see them strategize together and, like, just use their both militaristic, like, strategic ideas to... Like, yeah, you're right. That'd be a nice.
Yeah, plan. And it seems like there'd be like some natural respect there because of the military background. So
totally. Yeah, I'm all about it. I really like that. Nice.
What's next for you?
My next one for me, I am going a bit cerebral by choosing Bruce Banner and Hulk because.
All right. This was nice. Like, I like it.
Like, this was like, this is a relationship that like. Got to a very strange place that I don't think anybody expected in Avengers Infinity War. Like,
right.
we have not, like, we've seen a few Hulk movies at this point, a few of the, like, some of them not MCU, but, like, the idea of this, like, inner conflict that exists between Bruce, this dynamic specifically between Hulk and Bruce Banner is not one that we've really seen on the big screen before, and yeah. I'm kind of fascinated by it, and I'm kind of curious, like, how it's internally resolved. I'm curious how, like, that's visually approached. Like, I don't know how, like, you exactly kind of create that kind of environment. But I definitely, like, I'm excited to see them finally get on, like, some kind of level of the same page. And if that results, as has been rumored, in something like Professor Hulk, where you get to have, like, the brute strength of the Hulk with the brain of Bruce Banner, that's awesome. I'm super excited to see if that could happen.
Yeah. Oh, we're so good at this.
Yeah, right?
Why are we writing?
We should be writing this, absolutely.
Yeah, we should be writing these things. All right. My next pick, Rocket and Nebula.
Nice.
We know that they are the only two Guardians of the Galaxy left at this point. So, you know, but also they're not really friends.
Right.
It's not like they're, you know, buddy-buddy. So when they get back to the same part of the galaxy, how are they going to relate to each other? Are they just going to be too pissy and moody and angry to really interact with each other? Are they going to commiserate with each other about their lost friends? I just want to know how they're going to be together. No, knowing that they're the only ones left.
No, you're 100%. Like, I'd be curious, like, do they cling to each other just because, like, they're in basically in a room full of strangers that they have no idea who they are? And so, right. Like, you just gravitate towards the person you know. I mean, I've certainly been at that party before. I mean,
shit. Yeah.
I think that is a very, and like you said, like, they are such acerbic personalities. Like, it might be a case where, like, they're forced to gravitate together just because, again, they know each other, but that doesn't mean that they have to actually enjoy that time. They're just like trying to reach some kind of level of comfortability, or at least as much as is on the table. So
yeah. What's your last pick?
My last pick is another kind of classic, but Hawkeye and Black Widow. Again, this is kind of a relationship that we, like, they are incredibly close. We discovered that all the way back with Avengers. They have a long history together at S.H.I.E.L.D. Hawkeye, like, I mean, Hawkeye apparently, like, or I'm sorry, Black Widow has a debt, like, that she needs to repay for Hawkeye because he essentially saved her life. We still don't really know the full details on exactly what went down. I'd be curious if perhaps, like, down in Budapest, as it's been said, we still don't really know the full details of that. I'd love it if, like, in the same way that Avengers Infinity War, like, kind of, like, brought back a, like, loose plot thread by having Red Skull appear on Vormir and deal with the whole Soul Stone thing. I'd love it if Avengers Endgame found some way to call back to Budapest and, like, the relationship between Hawkeye and Black Widow, who, again, we have not seen actually together since they were on opposite sides of a fight in Captain America Civil War. Obviously, we are, and again, that's another relationship that we know for a fact is going to be actually featured in the movie just because of what we saw in both of the trailers, actually. Mm-hmm. So, I'm excited to see how those two are doing after everything goes down.
Yeah. My last pick is a little bit of a cheat.
Yeah.
Rocket and anybody. How difficult is this intergalactic raccoon going to be?
Yeah.
After he's lost Groot for the second time, is he going to be able to significantly bond with anybody? Now, we saw him with Thor in Infinity War, and he managed to actually have a good rapport with mm-hmm. Thor. So is he going to be willing to, you know, actually develop a relationship with anybody else? Is he just going to be difficult the whole time? Is he going to need a lot of convincing? You know, are we going to find him just in a bar trying to drink himself to death at some point? What's going to be happening with Rocket?
No, you brought up the relationship with Thor, which I think is a great point. And in fact, actually, like, that's another character that he may kind of a little bit gravitate towards. However, yeah. You also have to remember, like, Rocket, like, we haven't seen him for, like, 4 years. Like, he, like, after, as I mentioned earlier, like, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is set after, about 2 months after Guardians of the Galaxy. So, like, he's been with this group, his family, for lack of a better term, because it is the term to use. They've grown a closeness that he has never before experienced in his entire life. And that mm-hmm. might have by itself just kind of opened him up to kind of like being friends with Thor and kind of having that good relationship. That's not where he's going to be in Avengers Endgame at all. Like, he is going to, like, he's a guy who, like, pushes away people just because he's afraid he's going to lose them. Now he's lost absolutely everything after dedicating so much emotional energy into it. And yeah. I can't imagine that he is going to be absolutely game to just say, like, oh yeah, I'm just going to let everybody back into my life. That's not how that works. So
yeah. All right. We know that you have team ups you'd probably like to see. So tweet us at Hero Blend. Let us know what team ups you're really anticipating for Avengers Endgame. We're sure that you'll have some interesting ideas that we didn't even think of.
Absolutely.
All right, Eric. That's basically it for us this week. What do you have coming up?
So coming up, I have a fairly light week, but that's pretty much only because I am covering upcoming back-to-back events, WonderCon and CinemaCon. So that should be a bit of fun. However, one thing that is happening between now and then is actually I am sitting down. I'm going to cover the new indie movie from Neon called Little Woods. I'm going to be sitting down with actress Tessa Thompson, who, of course, comic book movie fans know as Valkyrie from Thor Ragnarok. And hopefully, maybe Avengers Endgame. We'll have to wait and see. But she's also sitting down with director Nia DaCosta, who is actually the director who is attached to direct the upcoming reboot of Candyman.
Terrifying.
I'm not sure I can actually express my opinion about the film just yet. I might be under embargo, so I'm not sure I should go further than that. But you can definitely anticipate all of my coverage on Cinema Blend.
Cool. Okay, guys. Be sure to subscribe to the Hero Blend podcast on iTunes. Make sure you drop us a review. Tell us how wonderful we are. We always love to hear that. Give us your comments and suggestions. And you should know that next week for you, we will have Eric's interview with Shazam and Aquaman producer Peter Safran.
Indeed.
Who has also worked with James Gunn a lot, correct?
Also very true.
Yay. So be sure to tune in next week, guys. That's all for us this time. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in next time.